This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, blamed the ruling ZANU-PF party for the country's continuing economic crisis.
That's Kudzai Zinawashi reporting from Harare. Details coming up.
Also, a career diplomat has been appointed as Ethiopia's first female president. Fighting between Cameroon's military and Anglophone separatists has killed more than 15 people in the past 2 days. And icy relations between Egypt and Sudan appear to be improving.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a career diplomat, Sahila Werkwar Zoude, has been appointed Ethiopia's first female president after the current president, Mulatu Teshome, unexpectedly resigned. We have in studio VOA's Salem Salomon to brief us on the matter. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Salem.
Thanks for having me.
Why did the president resign?
The current president of Ethiopia, Mulatu Teshome, resigned unexpectedly, as you said. Reports suggest that he resigned for what he says is supporting the reform process that the prime minister of Ethiopia is, going through right now. It's not really clear. He had 1 year term left, but he just said that he's going to support the reform.
So what kind of power does the Ethiopian presidency wield, and who selects the president?
So the presidency in Ethiopia has been ceremonial. Usually president's role includes, upon recommendation of the prime minister, for instance, they appoint ambassadors, they appoint envoys to other countries. They receive delegations. It's more ceremonial. The parliament unanimously approved today, as we saw, the appointment of Sahila Werk. But Sahila Werk comes from a very strong diplomatic background. She was taught in a French school when she was young. She left when she was a teenager to France, studied in Ivy League with a scholarship, Ivy League school in France. And went back, and her passion, as she said in the past, has been public service. So she started working in embassies in Francophone. She's fluent in French. She speaks French and covers Francophone countries. One of her earliest assignments was Djibouti. And since then, she's served as an ambassador to Djibouti, to Mali, to Senegal, you name it. And recently, she was the UN representative in a new role the UN opened in Nairobi. So she's a career diplomat who has a strong track record of public diplomacy.
So the president, the presidential position comes a week after Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed appointed a cabinet with half the posts taken by women. So what are we supposed to take from that with the new appointment of the president now in Ethiopia, the women's movement?
I mean, it's basically, I mean, you can call it that. I mean, women now hold 37% of Ethiopia's parliamentary seats, aside from the cabinet reshuffle that has 20 people and 10 of them are women. And we're not talking about token positions. These are women with strong educational background, some of them PhD holders, come from the Minister of Defense, for instance, is an engineer, a trained engineer who has a track record of leadership sitting in ministerial positions. The Minister of Peace also, which is a new position created, has a very strong background in these positions looking at the cabinet. So this is a new way that Ethiopia is basically opening up space for leadership positions in women, even if the president's position is symbolic, for instance, or ceremonial. It really shows young women that this is also possible for you.
So how's the overall situation in Ethiopia right now?
Well, you know, Ethiopia still has, you know, there are discrepancies here that we have to look at. Ethiopia, you know, as I said, you know, that there's a lot of patriarchy and also norms that are still very prevalent. Child marriage is very prominent in Ethiopia. Women, young girls still suffer from male-dominated cultures, cultural norms. Female genital mutilation is one of the problems that we've noticed. And so Ethiopia is very heavily entrenched in this. So we see maybe having women in higher positions might make a drift, I mean, a change in these things. But these are prevalent issues, serious issues affecting young girls and women in Ethiopia right now.
VOA Salem Salomon, thanks for your input.
Thank you for having me.
Fighting between Cameroon's military and Anglophone separatists has killed more than 15 people in the past 2 days. The military attacked at least 7 different separatist areas in the northwest on Tuesday, and fighting continued more than 24 hours. The Associated Press reports seeing at least 18 bodies, but other reports give higher casualty counts. Fighting in the northwestern and southwestern English-speaking regions began last year. It was sparked by a government clampdown on protests over what residents consider the marginalization of English speakers by the French-speaking majority. Hundreds have been killed and thousands have been displaced. This week's renewed fighting follows Monday's declaration that President Paul Biya won a 7th term in office in this month's election. Separatist militants threatened to disrupt voting in the Anglophone regions, which kept turnout low in English-speaking communities well under 20%.
I see relations between Egypt and Sudan appear to be improving. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir said today he is lifting a partial ban on imports of Egyptian goods that was imposed in May 2017. Other officials talked about joint projects in a number of fields to help attract foreign investment. Officials on both sides say the path to better relations has been paved by growing momentum in official and business ties. The two countries have been at odds over the construction of a massive dam in Ethiopia that Egypt fears may drop its share of the water from the Nile River. Other issues include land claims and accusations of political meddling.
Rwanda's National Public Prosecution Authority has discontinued its investigation of 13 Rwandans accused of the crime of genocide and crimes against humanity during the 1994 genocide. The reaction in Rwanda is mixed, as Eugene Uimana reports from Kigali.
Some Rwandans salute the decision to drop the investigations as a sign that the justice system works on evidence and fact, not political motivation. Jerome Mugabo lives in Kigali.
The decision of the national prosecution is just. It shows that the Rwandan government needs to promote unity and reconciliation, because it cannot keep on investigating on people without evidences, only because they served the last regime. I greatly salute this take.
The prosecutor's office did not specify why it was dropping the investigations. However, under the law it used to justify the decision, investigations can be dropped if elements of the case are incomplete. And the law allows cases to be reopened later if new evidence is found. The 13 Rwandans whose cases were dropped live abroad, most in Europe, but some are in the United States and Canada. Many had senior government jobs or were elected officials during the presidency of Juvenal Habyarimana. His plane was shot one day before the beginning of a genocide began against the Tutsi in April 1994. Nearly 1 million people died over 3 months before the killing was halted. Since then, scores of people have been convicted in Rwandan courts for crimes tied to the genocide. Maurice Ntahabari is one of the suspects whose case was dropped. He's a former Speaker of the Parliament and was rector of the University of Rwanda in 1994. His wife, Pauline Nyamasuko, was a Minister of Family Affairs and now is serving for a 7-year sentence for genocide crimes. Mulisa Seleman is among the Rwandans who is critical of the decision to drop the investigations.
I'm afraid that this decision will encourage genocide deniers who prepared and committed genocide. While they will, in Habyarimana's readership, they live in Europe and some of them are using social media just to speak the mind that they had even before 1994.
The Prosecutor General Jean Bosco Mutangana gave little information about the decision to drop the investigation, but said it is within the standards of law. This decision comes just shortly after French prosecutors discontinued their investigation into shooting down of President Habyarimana's plane. That investigation had been an irritant in relations between Kigali and Paris. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A career diplomat has been appointed as Ethiopia's first female president. Fighting between Cameroon's military and Anglophone separatists has killed more than 15 people in the past 2 days. And IC relations between Egypt and Sudan appear to be improving. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Zimbabwe's economic crisis has many symptoms, including long queues at fuel stations, a cash shortage, and now a price increase for medical care and treatment. Reporter Kutsai Zvinavashi has details.
Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, blamed the ruling ZANU-PF party for the country's continuing economic crisis.
This is a statement we are making in light of the situation in the country, which is debilitating and which is worsening by the day. Over the past few days, I've visited hospitals and clinics, have visited victims of cholera, have attended burials of cholera victims. I've also been in queues in the various parts of the country.
The ailing economy is showing several red flags, including price hikes for basic foodstuffs that are in a limited supply and a high cost of living. Now the medical sector is contributing to consumer stress. Dr. Fortune Nyamande is a member of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights.
The situation in the country right now is very critical, particularly as far as the drug supply is concerned. We have got an acute shortage of most essential drugs.
Nyamande explains that by essential drugs, he means painkillers, antibiotics, and other basic medicines that should be stocked by any hospital or pharmacy. He adds that even the emergency drugs and those used for chronic illnesses are scarce, leading to a loss of lives in the crisis.
People are dying. As we are speaking, people are dying in the hospitals. People are dying because of preventable illnesses, because of preventable conditions. And we are deeply worried by this situation.
A shortage of foreign currency needed to import medications contributes to the dwindling stocks. The government, in response, has been dispersing foreign currency to various sectors, especially fuel. Medical aid facilities usually help consumers. They act as insurance companies that promise to pay their members' medical bills. But that's changing. Many private hospitals and pharmacies are ditching payments in bond notes and are demanding US dollars for medications. As a result, medical aid pays for doctors in public hospitals and clinics, but leave it up to the consumer to pay for their medications. Obet Masaraure with the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says teachers and other civil servants who have religiously paid their bills to the AIDS facilities feel cheated.
The civil servants who were contributing towards medical aid are now getting in raw deal. The medical aid is not being accepted by doctors, it is not being accepted by pharmacists, so all these contributions are now coming to naught.
Nyamande and Masara Ure says the problem is that businesses want US dollars and the general public has no access to the currency. Economists say the government needs to decide what currency regime to adopt for the country. The bond notes that are in theory supposed to trade at par with the scarce US dollar have proven futile. The Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights says it's planning on a class action suit against the government for its failure to guarantee the public's right to affordable health care. Meanwhile, Chamisa says the situation is a sign that leadership is absent in Zimbabwe. For VOA, this is Kudza Izinawashe from Harare.
South Sudan's government today released five prisoners of war who had been held by national security officials. The release, however, excluded some opposition members who are thought to be in government custody. A national security official told journalists the release is implementing President Salva Kiir's order to free all prisoners of war and political detainees. VOA reporter Waki Simon Wudu was at the release in Juba and reports the five released detainees are the last batch the national security has in custody. However, opposition officials note that some members of the SPLM-IO are known to be in custody and have not been freed. Released SPLM-IO governor designate of Capieto, Marco Locidor. He confirmed that the other opposition activists are still in custody. The peace agreement that Kiir and opposition groups signed several weeks ago demand that all parties release all prisoners of war and political detainees in their custody.
An app for emerging black farmers is getting lots of attention in South Africa. It aims to connect them to supermarkets, restaurants, and home delivery services. Called Kula App, it's been growing in popularity since winning the prestigious MTN Business App of the Year award earlier this month. To find out more, reporter Vicky Stark spoke to co-founder Caritas Tinsolo.
Cool. So Kula is a supply chain solution for emerging farmers. We've got an ecosystem where we're connecting emerging farmers directly to formal markets. We allow them to supply together. So it's a crowdsourcing platform, which is linked to a logistics platform where we allow logistics companies to load their vehicles on the platform. And we've also got an e-commerce platform where the clients kind of place orders. So it's an ecosystem to help the farmer get a better margin for and better value for their produce.
And these are emerging black farmers?
Yes, mainly emerging black farmers. I think it's a common factor across the whole continent. More than half of the entire population on the African continent is dependent on small-scale agriculture for an income, and we have 60% of the world's arable land. So it's a way of harnessing this competitive advantage that we have as the African continent.
And how much does it cost for the farmers to sign up?
So the app is actually free. So it's fully free for the farmer to sign up and get on the platform, fully free to use, to access their financials. It's fully free because we understand the financial position of most of the farmers that we're currently dealing with. What we do is that we take a percentage on the commission at the moment, which is about 3%, which is a huge improvement on what the fresh produce market has been taking. They're taking about 15%. In addition to that, they have to pay about 30% to transport and fees. So it's a huge marginal improvement. And over time, we want to move that 3% down to 0.0. And we're looking at monetizing the business model in other ways, into like insurance or selling inputs to the farmers.
And how big is your team?
Funny enough, we're actually a team of about six at the moment. That's why we're so shocked to beat all the big banks. We beat Absa, FNB, all the big banks. We're a team of about six, which comprises of a coder, an operations manager, and just us who do the business development. But we're looking at capacitating the team over the next 2 months. So we'll be increasing our team as we're looking at closing a round of funding for the business.
Okay, and have there been any positive developments since you won the MTN award?
There's been huge positive developments. I think the media focus has put us in a position where a lot of farmers have heard about us. So I can tell you now that over the past week, we have tripled the number of farmers on the platform. So we've actually gone from 500 farmers to 1,500. So each morning I wake up, we're up by 300 farmers or something like that. So it shows that there's a clear need for a solution like this, not only in South Africa, but throughout the African continent.
How do you plan to expand?
So the formation of Kula is mainly Africa focused. We believe solely in coming up with African solutions for African problems. So the whole ethos around Kula is taking it across the African continent, and we need to get it right first. So during this pilot phase, we want to get it right within the Gauteng area, and as we get it right, we're plugging into the rest of South Africa. We're already engaging with Kenya. We'll be in Kenya beginning of next year. We're engaging with neighboring countries such as Botswana who need the solution. So the plan is to take it across the African continent, and there's opportunities even in your Southeast Asia and in India and so forth. We feel that there's a whole, we can go really far with the app. So the expansion plan is to take it to the African continent.
What other ideas do you have for using tech to help farmers?
I think there's a lot. The thing about agriculture is that it's our biggest competitive advantage. More than half of all people on the African continent are farmers. That is a crazy number. More than 60% of the world's arable land is on the African continent. More than half of all small businesses are agribusinesses. So there's a whole lot of gaps in the market. Like, for example, in Pretoria in South Africa, the hawkers there, the guys who sit on the side of the road, they're buying about 6 million rand a day from the fresh produce market. If someone came in to facilitate that, they'd actually gain access and be able to start a good business and use tech to help these markets, these farmers. So everything from crops to helping the farmers manage the farm management systems, to using drones to map their farms. There's so much opportunity in agriculture that we should harness as Africans, because if we don't do that, then the Americans or whoever, people from outside the country are going to come and start solving our problems. We need to learn to start solving our African problems in an African way, and in a way that we understand better. And that way we'll be able to basically grow as a continent. The economy of the future is not the economy of gold and diamonds. It's the economy of ideas. And we need to start getting engaged in those ideas and start coming up with solutions that speak to the problems that we have.
That was the co-founder of Kula App for Emerging Farmers, Caridius Tenshilo. He was speaking with journalist Vicky Stark in Johannesburg. And to find out more about the app, go to www.khula.co.za. That's www.kula.co.za.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Xiaogan Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will have an exclusive interview with Dr. Helena Ndube, Namibian ophthalmologist notable for her charitable work among sufferers of eye-related illnesses in Namibia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. She said she too young,
don't want no man. Starting Monday, November 5th, tune into Border Crossings to win a free copy of Now 68, featuring top songs from a variety of artists. This CD features Calvin Harris's One Kiss. Falling in love with me. along with Ariana Grande's God is a Woman and many other hit songs. Tune in to Border Crossings to win.
The Voice of America, VOA.